In today's episode, I'm delighted to be joined by Matt Rabizen. Matt is the founder of Lightbox Logic and the creator of Marketing Cloud Connect Toolbox, which has recently been listed on the Salesforce App Exchange. Matt came back on the show to tell us all about his journey of building the Marketing Cloud Connect Toolbox, where the idea came from, how he approached building it whilst being in employment, what the App Exchange process was like, tips he would share with others looking to build a product, and the different roles that he is now having to play as he gets the business off the ground. I really enjoyed having Matt back on the show, and I hope you enjoy the episode. Matt, welcome back.
Thanks, Ben.
It's been a while, hey? I think it must be, pre-COVID we had you last on the podcast, so we're talking a good few years now.
It kind of feels like an eternity ago. I think there's kind of a timeline of a pre-COVID and a post-COVID, isn't there?
Yeah, that's right. And I think a lot has changed in your world. So back then we looked at your career, kind of how you moved into the Salesforce space. And for anyone listening, I recommend that you do go back and have a listen to that as well, because Matt's got an interesting journey into Salesforce. But let's presume people listening to this don't know you, haven't listened to that podcast. We're going to go over what you're doing now, but I think it's probably good to set the scene and just tell our listeners a little bit about your background, both in Salesforce and non-Salesforce, just so people can understand your skill set a little bit better.
Yeah, no, that sounds good. Journeys continued and getting longer. I've generally come from quite a technical background, which has certainly helped me in my journey. I've always loved programming right from a kid, which always really set my trajectory through to university. So I did computer science at university, pretty much straight out into a web product company in the startup world, which leads more into where I've landed. But did that for about 10 years. Then we got acquired. Moved into a large public company, which is a very different type of organization than the startup world. That journey, I learned a lot. As acquisitions happen to a large company, they slowly shut down our product, which made me shift more into operations world, managing other products, services teams, large ERP implementations, but not as the expert, as more of the people manager, the project management, making sure the projects are going right. While I learned a lot, I certainly found that that wasn't the space that I necessarily had the passion for. I really did enjoy a little bit more of the technical side. And that eventually brought me through to Salesforce, looking for something a little bit different. Where can I become an expert in a particular product? And eventually, I think we kind of met in Trailhead Tuesday as I was exploring the Salesforce world. You know, you gave me some great pointers and thoughts, and that brought me into the Salesforce world.
And plenty of beer and pizza.
Yeah, that might have been the initial catch. who can say no to beer and pizza free, and then you meet the great people in the Salesforce world?
Yeah, for sure. So how long ago was that? Like, when did you actually make the transition into Salesforce?
It's a good question. I think it's probably coming on about 6, maybe 7 years now, I think.
And we're obviously going to talk about your journey now moving into the product world, building a product, listing on the App Exchange. That's going to be the main topic today. But did you always come into the Salesforce ecosystem and have this vision one day to do that? Or was it just by the off chance that you kind of spotted an opportunity?
I think I have always wanted to go back into the product world. So obviously that I've had a lot of experience. My first 10 years was in software product. Even the acquiring company was a software product and hardware company. So I've always seen and enjoyed the value of focusing on a single item, a single product, and being able to refine that over time, working with customers, which is very different to a consulting world and project delivery where everything is new. The objective is not to make something perfect. It's far more managing a budget to a timeline and a delivery and then moving on, which I very much enjoyed while I was doing it. So the Salesforce world, I have really enjoyed what I've been doing. The project world, the architecture, you know, how these large landscapes fit together, I certainly enjoyed. But I always have had that thought that it would be great to shift back to a product focus world, which has a very different view to it. So while I wouldn't say I came into the Salesforce world going, oh, at some point I'm going to jump and making a product, it's certainly been something in the back of my mind for many years in prior to coming into the Salesforce world.
So were there any other ideas you had prior to this one that you kind of thought about going for, but then decided against?
Yeah, nothing to the extent that I've gone on now, but certainly I love technology. So there's, I think where I've played with those ideas is more, there's an interesting, you know, big data came into the world. So we had these ideas of MongoDBs and things like, oh, what could I do with that? And then you start playing and you try and fit ideas into a product, which is not always the best way to end up with a product. So I've always dabbled in things, but nothing has really resonated as, okay, this would be something that would be worth investing significant time, effort, and risk in going. So I'd say, yes, I played with things, but nothing that ever really had a huge focus like now.
So tell us a bit about the product that you have launched, and I guess where the idea came from, how it came about.
So the product came about over a journey. So Salesforce and Marketing Cloud is kind of the product. It works as a more advanced integration between the two. But essentially, I've worked at a lot of companies in the Salesforce world that have had both of those. I've played with, well, not played with, but I've been on projects with Salesforce and Marketing Cloud. The original product that we actually built in our startup world, interestingly enough, had a large portion of that product was a cross-channel marketing solution that did SMS, email. It was in the print industry, so it actually had a large piece when print was something where you actually delivered things to people's mailboxes, which was direct to mail. So it did full cross-media where you had a print piece, an email, an SMS, and you launched these full cross-media campaigns. It was actually pretty good for what it did. I think it's certain products that still don't even do what we did back then, but I certainly had a good idea. So when these customers had Marketing Cloud and Salesforce, I think I always showed an interest. I always spoke to the marketing teams. I always wanted to know what was going on there, which also meant that because I was a developer and the marketing world generally is devoid of real technical skills often, I would get taken to help in little projects there. So I had those ideas. So essentially over time, I built up a niche skill set of the core CRM Salesforce side and the Marketing Cloud side and how those worlds work together, which eventually when you're at enough companies that you see the problems that are going on, and then at the end at Xero, which was the previous company I was just at, they had a lot of these things worked out, which was kind of like an aha moment, like, oh crap, we don't have to deal with this. These things can work. So that was kind of where the ideas kind of, you know, essentially came from.
So what was the actual gap, I guess? What does the product solve?
Yeah, so Salesforce and Marketing Cloud, there's a standard connector called Marketing Cloud Connect. That's fairly old now. So it was kind of came in play at the acquisition kind of nearly 10 years ago now of ExactTarget. It does a fairly good job of shifting Salesforce data into Marketing Cloud for the marketing cloud teams to work, the marketing teams to work with. What it doesn't do a particular job of is surfacing that data back to the CRM. And essentially the way that it brings that data back causes huge storage implications. And there's lots of gaps in when it does or doesn't work. So ultimately, it's a product, an AppExchange product that installs very quickly and easy, set up within 30 minutes and solves an enormous amount of one problems, but then additional features and insights across what that can do.
If you think back to the companies that you identified this trend of having the problem, what wasn't the Marketing Cloud Connect doing that like frustrated a user?
Yeah, so right back starting at the Lendlease days, right at the beginning was when I fell straight in. There's a large Marketing Cloud project going on. One of their initial fundamental ones is Marketing Cloud does not save the live email that's gone out to a customer. So it saves a template with personalization tags, but not what went out. And Lendlease, for compliance reasons and different things, really wanted to have that actual live email. So that's really where I first had a bit of a, wow, that's a big gap. I think a lot of these gaps, people think it would do, but it simply doesn't. And you get Australian Securities Exchange, they're sending a lot of emails and the data storage volume. So basically every email that gets sent from Marketing Cloud, and marketing is a large send. So if you send to 300,000 people in a blast, it puts 300,000 records in one blast into Salesforce in a custom object. Now, if you start doing multiple and many of those over a period of time, you easily get millions, if not billions of records in this object. Salesforce is not a large data platform and it costs a lot of money to do that. So what people end up doing in ASX, we're doing the same thing, is they just start deleting that data until you're only holding like 2 weeks worth of send data to keep that volume again. So that's a big one a lot of customers struggle with that it also solves because it can show that visibility into the sends by real-time API calls instead of actually synchronizing the data all back.
And obviously, like, you had the benefit of seeing multiple clients go through this challenge, but I'm sure you didn't just go, right, I'm going to build it. Like, what research did you go away and do to make sure there was a need and it wasn't just by chance the three or four customers you'd worked with were the only ones having that problem?
When you've been at the majority of the companies that you've been at over your time is having a problem. I mean, I think that was the first moment of going, I think we've got something. If you've got this repeating trend over and over again, the second one that I did was the idea exchange. And I think that's a big one for anybody really looking, because any of the challenges or things that people are having, Salesforce has this great idea exchange where you put ideas, people vote on them. If you're not seeing people, if I didn't see people logging these as idea exchange problems, it either means one of two things. It really isn't a problem, or it's not a problem worth solving because there's not enough people. Two, people might have a problem, but it's not a big enough problem for them to really care about. So you can say, that's a problem because I can't click on X. But if they're happy to move on, are they really going to pay for it if they can't even be bothered putting something on the idea exchange? So thankfully, when I went to the idea exchange, these problems are everywhere. I think my tool solves 1,400 votes worth of, you know, in this package of ideas across many different ideas. It's not just one idea that I solve. That certainly became another tick in the yes, I think this is something that people are having a problem that's worth solving.
And did you know for sure you could solve the problem?
So that was probably the other big part of the, you've got a problem and you've justified that you think it's worth solving. I think that was the other piece that needed to be validated and part of my journey when I took it is exactly that. So the interesting thing is, although I say Xero had solved a lot of these problems and I saw an aha moment that we don't have to deal with these problems, I think that was the aha moment is we don't have to deal with these problems. They're solvable, but it's a very different scenario to solve it in an ad hoc way for one customer. In particular, the way generally these problems are all solved is from Marketing Cloud. So all these automations and things happen in the Marketing Cloud world. Unfortunately, Marketing Cloud is not a good platform to have a sellable product and install it into a platform. Salesforce, on the other hand, the core platform is brilliant. You've got managed packages, you've got the App Exchange store, all of your IP gets hidden. So it gets installed and it's all hidden and has all this IP protection, has upgradability. All these things as a product company, you need to be able to have to really leverage license management. There's a whole list of these things. So what I then needed to prove is, could I deliver the same type of answers that Xero had, but in a completely different way because I need to solve them from Salesforce instead of from Marketing Cloud? So I need to do everything in the reverse. The biggest challenge being volume. So Marketing Cloud deals with large volumes of data. Salesforce is not a good platform at processing and deal with long-running synchronizations. So the other thing in terms of what I wanted to solve is I did not want to use third-party services. I didn't want to use AWS. I didn't want to use anything external to the platform because I'd learned over being in financial services and banks, Commonwealth Bank and things like that, that data governance, PII data, which this is all working with, becomes a big challenge for them because then you need SOC compliance, you go through large security reviews, and I didn't want that. So being able to architect and design so we can stay just on platform, so nothing leaves the platform, makes it a lot more challenging because you've got to deal with all the governor limits and everything like that. But then when it actually is a product and you're talking to customers, when you can say, no, it never leaves your Salesforce platform. You've got your agreements in place with Salesforce. They stand tight. I don't fall outside of that. Therefore, we can just move on to the next question. And that's essentially how it goes, which is great.
Yeah, and that in itself will be a massive game changer for your sales cycle, right? Because I know that like going through those security reviews with any big company these days is an absolute nightmare.
Yeah, and also Salesforce, obviously, with the App Exchange, you go through the whole Salesforce security review. So that gives you another check when you go through these, you know, compliance and security reviews with the end customers is when you can say that you've passed Salesforce's security review and everything stays on platform. Therefore, all of Salesforce's security stays there. You get a lot of confidence from the customers when you talk about these kind of things with the security teams.
Yeah, we'll touch on the process of the app exchange shortly. But I hear a lot of people like that have ideas and they kind of question their idea because they're like, well, if it was a good idea, Salesforce would have already done it. Or what's to stop Salesforce from just doing this? Was that ever part of your kind of thought process?
Yeah, and it has to be. And there was a large part in evaluating that because you need to decide whether it's worth doing as what are the other competitors in the market? Are there other competitors? Because you need to, not just against Salesforce, but against other app exchange vendors or people repeating. So you need to, what's going to be your differentiator against the competitors? You either need to be cheaper, you either got to be better at the product and make a better product than they do, or you need to be cheaper. They're really your generally your only two factors that you've got to play in, unless they've got a bad reputation from support or something like that, that you can go, well, people just don't like them. But generally, it's either price or function. Often it's hard to come into function into an established market because they've probably been doing it for many years, but maybe their products become bloated and it's really difficult to implement. But you need to have a differentiator. You can't just go and go, well, how do you compare to them? And you go, well, I don't know, I'm just another option. You need to be able to have that value proposition there. For me, it was a little bit different because nobody has solved this. It's very difficult to solve. So my skill set gave me a unique niche because not many people have a deep knowledge of the core Salesforce CRM and deep knowledge of Marketing Cloud and both of those worlds. I faced a lot of challenges. You know, that was part of my POCing process. I spent a lot of time trying different ways, different methods, failing. It gets too slow because where sometimes it works small, scale that because most customers with Marketing Cloud are reasonably large. So, and you're talking large volume. So when I'm in a test environment with 10 contacts, great, it works fine. Scale that to 1 million, 2 million, 20 million. And all of a sudden it takes hours to run. Nothing works. So it can be a very humbling process to go, yes, I've solved this, and then run into a brick wall that now you spend the next month trying to come up with a different way to solve it. And I did that over and over again through that.
When did you feel like I've done it? You know, I've solved it. When did you hit those large data volumes and just breeze through them?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I guess a little bit of the journey that came to this was I spent quite a long time working on the core product. And then I worked with, he's been on the podcast, you know, Chris Pearson at Jostens. He put his hand up to be my pilot customer. So they're large volume. And I'll tell you, they're large volume. They're in the US, big sends. And I think that's where I hit my brick wall. It was quite humbling because I'd been working on this for 6 months. So probably if I step back one step of where this build process started was zero. I started at zero, and not too long after, there was a lot of change. Everybody started laying people off. Salesforce was laying people off. All the consultancies were laying people off, and Xero announced, you know, they were laying off a large number of people. So at that point, I had to think to myself, well, what happens if I'm laid off? I'd only been there for, I think, 2 months. So, you know, you're arguably a bit of a candidate for a layoff if you haven't been there too long. But there were some reasonable redundancy packages. So I was like, well, if I got laid off, this might be that one-off opportunity to go, well, that might give me some breathing room to have a go. And that's one thing I would say to people. If talks of redundancies are out there and there's on and off things of that, use potentially as a positive. It's actually how I got into the Salesforce world. And I didn't touch on that actually. I was made redundant post-acquisition about 5 years of that company and a reasonably large redundancy, which allowed me to spend a lot of time to reskill into Salesforce. So I saw another one of these opportunities as a way to start a product. With some, you know, financial backing to give me a little bit of time. I didn't get made redundant, you know, thankfully or negatively, depending on how I was at the time. I love Xero. It was a fantastic place to work. So I was happy not to get made redundant. But there was a train that had started to run in my head to go, well, I've thought of this product I actually want to do if I was made redundant. So I was like, I think I want to do this regardless. So thankfully, I had a really supportive manager at Xero. We had these discussions and I said, I either need to leave, I think I have to give this a go, or maybe we could do a part-time or something like that. And he was very supportive. So I went 4 days at Xero to work out kind of in a risk-free way. Now, not every organization is going to allow people to do that. If you can, it can be a very interesting way to get into it because you take a small, well, you know, reasonable financial cut in what you're doing, but then you've still at least got that income coming in to support. So that worked really well for me doing, you know, 1 day a week on the project. So I worked 6 months before I got the product to a point where I felt I could start to engage with a customer and work with them. So I started to put out some really only one LinkedIn post to kind of let a bit of a genie out of the bag. And Chris, as I mentioned, put his hand up, like, I'd be keen, you know, pilot, you know, use me. So, and he's fantastic. He's been really a key part that if anyone goes on a journey, if you can find somebody that is willing to help you and spend your time, put it in a real environment and be okay if things don't work, that's the key thing. You need to be able to experiment with them and learn, because I failed a lot of times. Click, go. We would sit there. I think the first time we put the component to show email, my first go, he just sat there for 2 minutes and then said, timed out. I was like, this is not going to work.
And the thing is, you didn't know Chris that well at that point, right? It wasn't like someone you'd worked with before. Or so like you, that must be pretty daunting, that sitting there and you're showing it, like, even to some degree, a little bit embarrassing there.
It was like, I didn't know how he's going to respond. We'd done some interactions on LinkedIn before, but not a lot. It's not like we were, you know, some mate that I had beers down at the pub every other weekend. So when you go and put this in for the first time and you're like, I don't know what's going to happen here. And at the time, that was one of my main pieces of my solution, was this without having to synchronize data, and straight away failed.
Yeah, but you have to fail, right? And like, given that opportunity with Chris, like he went into that with open eyes that this wasn't the finished product as well, I guess you kind of explained that. And but yeah, you're right. Like having someone like him, you probably couldn't have asked for a better person, because he's engaging, but also in an environment of scale.
Environment of scale. So that was, I think, the key thing with Chris as well, is he was my worst case scenario. It's great and disastrous right at the same time to go, you are testing your initial beta MVP versions on your worst possible scenarios. So while that was very hard, because I think probably 80% of customers that I work with, probably more, 90%, I think there's only going to be, you know, a small percentage that do the volumes of emails that they're sending, to go, I'm essentially testing on my edge case. So that's good and bad. So because there's many customers that I probably could have gone without worrying about that, because it will probably work for them. But it forced me to refine right from the start. When you're refining your foundations to that volume, it makes it much easier than trying to go the other way, building all these functions and then going, okay, now I'm going to try and scale it. And that's where a lot of things come unstuck, because all your foundations are shaky. So it forced me to have great foundations right from the start.
Yeah, 100%. It couldn't have been better, really. So when did you get the confidence, and what gave you the confidence to go full-time and leave Xero?
So I think a big part of it was my network around me. So it was ultimately, I'd been on this journey for a while now. So I think what it was, beginning of last year, I went part-time. Chris, I engaged with around Dreamforce about September. And then there was a few months with him to go, okay, this is working. You know, we did get it working, thankfully. And then friends, colleagues, you know, over the beers when you talk about things, and they go, you should really try this. You know, you're going to regret not really giving this a crack. And I was working with a lot of people internal with Salesforce as well that I knew, and they helped go, yes, you know, there is this problem here. We see it as well. So I think there was enough validation. Nobody told me no. I actually even told people in the conversation, I think this is important for people as well. What you don't want when you're asking people, do you think this is a good idea, is you need to tell them, don't just tell me yes because you think you're going to make me happy, because that's the worst thing somebody can do for you, because you get this inflated confidence that's not real, that if you jump, that's far more catastrophic than somebody breaking your heart, you know, early on going, I don't think that's going to work, you know. And there were discussions around that, because Salesforce, that landscape is changing. We've got Data Cloud, we've got Marketing Cloud Growth. So we've got these other products that the first question that a lot of people ask when they really are challenging you properly is they go, well, what does that mean for your product? And thankfully, talking it through is maybe in 5-6 years' time, this landscape is significantly different. But the idea is there's a lot of runway still in that space, or enough to justify the investment now while we work through that. I think the big one as well, and I think this is something that if people are looking at this space, is it's back to your age old, and as architects and everything, we do this all the time. It's risk versus reward, right? So at the end of the day, I stepped back and said, what is the worst case scenario if this doesn't work, right? I leave Xero, I go full time, and it fails. I make no money. what is that worst case scenario that can come out? And basically, I kind of work through those ideas. It's like, well, I need to go back and get the same. Now, maybe it might not be zero, which was a fantastic job, fantastic place. I'd have to find somewhere else. Worst case, they're just not as good a company. I was pretty confident in our Salesforce world that I was going to be able to go back and get another job and basically resume life as, you know, somewhat what it was. So once you kind of assess what is the worst that could happen if catastrophic failure happens. So what I did is I basically set out a roadmap milestone of like, I need to hit this by this date and this, and I'll give myself a year because that you work out, you know, time versus financial, how long you could kind of go without that salary. And, you know, things always take longer than you expect as well. So you've got to bear in mind that you're not going to go, I'm going to have a product and a month later, I'm just going to have, you know, miraculously have, you know, hundreds of customers. But it was really, yeah, that confidence that other people gave me that, yes, this is a product that has value. And then really, what's the worst case scenario? Because the upside is great. You know, it's you know, you get your own company.
Yeah, for sure. Worst case scenario is you'd have to work with me again.
That's right. And I say it could be either way, right? Like, so if I'm super successful, then I've got to work with you again to get more people, or I've got to work with you to find a new job. Either way, I think we're both, we get to work together again.
Either way, I'm winning.
Yeah.
So you mentioned the App Exchange, and I've had a couple of people on the podcast that have touched on the App Exchange in the past, but I think there's lots of people out there that want to launch a product. You know, a lot of people are sitting there looking for their opportunity like you found and thinking, right, one day I'd like to be in this position. What tips can you share? What were your lessons from going through that process of listing on the App Exchange?
Yeah, I think one of the first things in terms of what is the product itself, right? And I think I'd had some great advice many years ago that you want to solve a problem that people are having or a gap that is there. What a lot of people sometimes do is they dream up new things and they sound great. And you know, an example is, you know, a drone breakfast delivery service that brings you breakfast in the morning via a drone. It's like, okay, sounds kind of cool, you know, but what is it a problem people really have? Is it a problem somebody are actually seeking? And the answer is, well, probably not. It sounds great, sounds cool, but, you know, it's unlikely that anybody's really going to pay for something. So I think the best and easiest way is to not invent problems. Don't go out and try and invent a problem that doesn't exist and then try and solve it. Really look at the problems that are there. And the best ones are, what are the problems like I had? What are the problems that the customers or the projects that you've had when you've been brought in? Say you're a consultant, you've had to deliver a project. Well, could that project have been turned into a product? And ultimately, if you can then package that, you know, let's say the project was worth $100,000, $200,000, $300,000. Could you invest your time to turn that into a product that there's enough customers? And that's the other thing, is it, was it super niche to that one customer? Doesn't have to have hundreds of thousands of customers out there that need it, but you do need some niche. Niches are great because also it's maybe a domain you might have a little bit of extra expertise that other people don't have. But ultimately, look for a problem that already exists that people might be looking for solutions for. So look in your day-to-day work. What do you run into all the time? What are projects that you've delivered for other customers that you think could be beneficial to other ones, rather than inventing a problem that really may not exist. In terms of the App Exchange itself, a couple of things for people is, one thing I think I went a bit backwards on or did around the wrong way is the security review. I would suggest people, if you are at that point, submit for security review as soon as you possibly can. You don't have to have customers or anything ready. If you've just got an MVP with a few small functions, you can submit for security review. One, it's easier. The smaller your product is at the time, the easier it's going to be to go through. The less you've got a document, the less they're going to have to review. And the security review lasts for 2 years or up to 2 years, depending on. So when you're going through this, it's a very time-consuming process to go through. So the sooner you can get that out of the way and done, then you don't have to worry about it. I did it right at the end, and I'm starting to already engage with customers going, I need this. It takes time. You know, it can take up to 8 weeks for the review if you pass. And submit early.
So is that a bit of a loophole? Because once you've delivered this kind of MVP, then you can continue building, right? And your product can look very different after the review has already been done, but they've only reviewed a small part of it. So yeah, that sounds like a bit of a loop up. But then in 2 years, again, you have to resubmit for security review. Is that right?
Correct. So it's going to bite you at some point. And it's up to 2 years, so they could turn around and review in 6 months, a year. It's at their discretion. I don't know how they evaluate that. You know, it could be the amount that changes in your package, because they know that you have an upgrade path. They know what's changing over time. I'd say there is a little bit of a loophole there in terms of getting in there early and then you get a change. But it's the nature of the way it works. You submit it a period of time, you continue building until your next review. But certainly, I think just generally the notion of submit for security review earlier rather than later. Don't get to the end and go, oh, I really need this now, because you're going to have a few months down the track before that's actually going to happen. And probably the last one that I'll leave with is, I've been given this advice, and I think I learned this through my startup days, is people tend to undervalue their own product from a financial perspective. And they often put like either hours to dollars. Well, it took me one day. That doesn't mean your product's worth very little versus it took me 5 years to build. Equally, that actually doesn't make it worth a lot of money. Time to dollars doesn't really equate. It's what value are you going to bring to the customer? What's the return on investment? And I think a lot of people coming, especially if you're a developer or something, generally I will say people undervalue their own products. The problem with having a product that's too cheap is people also don't look at it as it has a lot of value. If you say this costs $1 a month, people go, well, it mustn't be very good. If you say this costs $1 million a month, it must be great. And while there's a fine line between finding that balance between, you know, what too expensive versus too cheap, I think too cheap is almost as bad as being too expensive in terms of what the product gets seen as.
And is that something Salesforce gives some guidance on as well?
I didn't have a lot of guidance in that, to be honest. I think the easiest way, what I did as well to work out what the value was, is if there are other app exchanges products, it's fairly public working out what app exchange products cost and things, or working out. I didn't have a direct competitor in the space, but I certainly had similar kind of tools that I compared myself against to come up with that value. So what's a similar kind of tool that may not be doing the same thing, but the similar concept? And that will give you a bound of what people are kind of selling those tools at. And ultimately, that was my biggest bearing on the price.
What about asking, like, did you ask someone like Chris, what would you pay for this? I guess it's a hard question to answer there, Ryan, because it's like, well, how long's a piece of string?
I asked a lot of people that. And people don't know. It's one of those funny things, like, how much would you pay for this duck, right? Unless somebody actually has to pay for it, it's very hard for them to answer that question. And I think almost you have to pressure test that. You have to go, this is $1,000. And if the reaction's like, buy, then you go, oh, I'm too expensive. Or if it's just next question, then you're probably too cheap. And I think really that can only be answered. And I think that was probably the biggest question I didn't actually know the answer to. And probably my biggest risk. I knew the problem was there. I knew a lot of people had the problem. I did not know whether people would pay for a solution. And how much somebody would pay for a solution. That was my biggest risk, because I know if I released this as a free app, there'd be so many people that would install it. I did not know if people would pay for it. Thankfully, it's turning out that it is a big pain point and people are willing to pay for it, which is great. But I think that's the risk.
Well, the thing is, right, you're playing in a space where people are already making a significant investment. Anyone that's got Marketing Cloud and Salesforce Core is going to be paying a decent chunk of money. And if they're not humming, then there's a gap, right? So, and also you're freeing up data, which is expensive.
Yeah. And there's some definite, you know, that return on investment. You can go, this is costing you this. My tool's cheaper than that. Therefore, it's a no-brainer. I think on the counter argument that some people have as well, though, is they get their back up a little bit, because it's like, I'm paying a lot. Salesforce should be doing it themselves. Why do I have to pay you? And ultimately, my answer to that is, I actually, you know, somewhat agree with you. I've been there with many customers. I'm not saying that questioning of whether the out-of-the-box integration should do it. The fact is it doesn't. There's a gap, and I've come up with a really good way, an easy way to solve that. I think arguably better than Salesforce would ever do it themselves, because I've invested so much time in this one niche thing if Salesforce even solved it, there's no way they're going to do it as good as I am. And that's, I think vendors generally solve things better than what Salesforce sometimes do themselves, because they got so much time and energy and effort going into one small piece. They're going to solve it better than Salesforce will. But ultimately, I don't disagree with customers that come up with that argument to me. I diffuse it because I've been there. But at the end of the day, if you want a solution to it, this is a very good option for you.
I was just about to ask you what skills you've had to learn and develop since you've now, you're wearing all the hats, right? But you've just shown to me you're already an amazing salesman, because you've just overcome an objection live on this call and pitched the business to me exactly how I would have done it myself.
I think if we talk about skills that we've had to learn and pick up, and I'm very early in my journey in this space as well, is I wouldn't say sales as general as an environment, because I've always had, and I think a lot of people do have, a sales element. Even if your role is not sales, you probably have to sell things. If you're an architect, you have to sell an architecture design. If you're a developer, you might have to pitch a design to a stakeholder or to an architect. So I think everybody undervalues some of the things that they're learning in their journey. Been fortunate enough that I've been involved in a lot of pre-sales technical discussions. So whether it's for, you know, consulting firms, or even in my startup days, I was always involved in demoing the product and helping that. What I wasn't though in any of these scenarios, and this is even putting together your own webinar and things, is generally I'm never that leading person in the relationship, driving the deal, driving those discussions. What's our next actions? And they're the things I've had to learn, because I'm normally the person that's the supporting act that helps drive. So lots of discussions. I can work at exec C levels. I've done very large presentations, but not as the, at the end of the call, what's our next action? When's our next meeting? How do you keep the deal moving and not just going stale? And I think they're the biggest things that I'm still learning now, because it's like, I think I've even called you up a couple of times and go, Ben, you know, how do I re-engage with this customer that's gone silent on me? And I'm having to learn a lot. It's humbling.
Welcome to my world. But no, it's awesome as well, because right, you no one can ever master Salesforce, but you'd achieved a lot in the 6 years, and now this is a new challenge. But you're CFO, you're the CIO, you're the CEO, like you're the chief marketing officer. If you've never run your own business before, I don't think you really appreciate every hat you have to wear until you actually have to wear them all.
And I think that was a large part when we talk about going full-time versus the part-time. There are so many things that you need to do that you don't think about. Even just getting a website together, you then get a Salesforce platform. You've got to do all these things that you deliver to a customer, but you're a full-time, you know, a web to lead so that they can land. Just putting together a webinar, these that you put together, questions, like, so we did our launch webinar. It was so time-consuming, coordinating. I had Chris Pearson as a co-host. How are we going to make this work? The agenda. Again, I'm often the supporting act, like I am on this, to your podcast. The things that you have to do behind the scene, legal documents, orders, master service agreements, there are business insurance, you know, like there are so many things that, and I think that's when I got to the point where part-time got me 70% to a product that was mostly launchable working with Chris over, let's call it, you know, a 12-month part-time period. I saw the time to actually make this a business that is selling a product to actual customers. It would take me at one day a week, so much longer than I was willing to just do at one day, because you go, I'm going to do a website. If that's going to take you 2-3 days to put together your images, your content, your forms, your SEO, even just setting up the hosting, the domains, there's so many things that just go into simply a website. If that's going to take you 3 days to do, but that's 3 weeks part-time. So yeah, I think that was a big part of, like you said, wearing so many hats. I got to the point where I have to go full time or I'm never really going to launch this.
How good are you at keeping your Salesforce org up to date as a salesperson? Now you're on the other side of the fence.
I'd like to say it started off okay. I invested a bit of time in it to get the processes right. And people have asked me, you know, are you actually using marketing? Are you syncing? And the answer is yes. So I've tried to be good to myself. How good am I updating it? I will say I've got some separate notes that get scrawled things and that aren't updated. So I'll give myself a 60% mark at the moment. I think the busier you get, the worse it gets.
You've become a typical salesperson.
Unfortunately, I report to myself, so I can only go mad at myself. I think if I had a, you know, a CFO or something yelling at me, I'd have to be a little bit better.
So to sign off, for anyone listening, I guess an opportunity just to kind of make it really clear, like who should be banging on your door looking at this product right now?
Thanks for letting me have a little pitch at the end. But yeah, the great thing from the product perspective, it's ultimately anybody that has Salesforce and Marketing Cloud. If you've got those two products, you're likely running Marketing Cloud Connect. If you're not, even better. This tool is going to help even more for you if you're not running that, or there's challenges where you might not be able to run that. But ultimately, anybody that's got Salesforce and Marketing Cloud, there's absolute value in Marketing Cloud Connect Toolbox. And that's ultimately the product name. It's fully listed on the AppExchange. We got to pass security review, thankfully, first go. So I pat myself on the back for that one, because that was a lot of time and effort went into that one. But ultimately, yeah, you can find us on as Marketing Cloud Connect Toolbox on AppExchange, or reach out to me personally. But yeah, anybody with Marketing Cloud and Salesforce, you know, there is a lot of value here.
Well, it sounds to me like right product, right time, right person. So I'm sure it's going to be a success. And yeah, look forward to seeing how that evolves. And yeah, really excited for what's to come.
Thanks so much for catching up, Ben.